Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ and East County Magazine. Today, my newsmaker is George Gastel. George is a member of the Lemon Grove City Council for the last 4 years. He has previously served on the Lemon Grove School Board. He's a history professor at Grossmont and Miramar Community Colleges and previously at San Diego State, and he comes from a long line of politicians and educators. Both his mother and his father ran for Congress. His mother served on the school board, Janet Gastel. His father, Gordon Gastel, was a geologist and a professor at San Diego State, and unfortunately he passed away last year, but George has followed in his footsteps, and he's here today to share with us some of his wisdom through the years and some information about some exciting new things happening in Lemon Grove, an exciting 50th birthday celebration he has coming up, as well as bring us some international perspective back from his recent trip to the Middle East. George, welcome to the show.
Well, it's an honor to be here. I should note, I grew up in La Mesa, and my mother was on the La Mesa Spring Valley School Board, and my family moved to Lemon Grove in 1994.
So you've been out there for almost 20 years. How has the community changed since you first set eyes on Lemon Grove, George?
It's been changing gradually. It's more and more multicultural. And it also seems to be getting younger. We have quite a lot of young people, and we have quite a few senior citizens, too. What the biggest change that's really affected our community life is that we don't have the same kind of old guard of folks who've lived in Lemon Grove for a long time, who volunteer for lots of different organizations. We don't have as many of those folks as we did 20 years ago. This has been a huge challenge for getting community activities going, but we have a new batch of folks that are coming forward, and really it's a transition that we're going through with getting new types of folks plugged in.
Right. Now, a lot of these folks are coming from all around the world. I believe I've heard that Lemon Grove is the most ethnically diverse city in California. Is that true?
Well, I don't know about the whole state of California, but it certainly is very ethnically diverse. Yeah. When I was on the school board, we noticed that the largest population among the children was Latino, and African Americans were the second largest group, followed closely by Caucasians. But that only tells you part of the story, that we actually have several Asian groups and several Middle Eastern cultures and immigrants from Africa as well.
Right. They're coming from Ethiopia and Somalia and all kinds of places, the Sudan, all sorts of different nations. Lemon Grove has some very exciting things going on, I understand. Tell us a little bit about some of the downtown redevelopment and new projects coming in.
Well, at one point, there were about 8 major buildings going on in Lemon Grove. They weren't all related to the city, but it is very exciting just to see the growth. The one that's probably the biggest and most noticeable right now is the housing project, Citronica 1, and Citronica 2 will be coming later, but Citronica 1 is creating quite a lot of affordable housing, and it's practically right next to the Lemon Grove trolley station. That's actually where I'm having my birthday roast.
Fun. We're going to get to that in just a minute.
And the other giant building that's new is the library, which is a project of the school district and
beautiful
the
building.
County library system.
Now, there's also a promenade being built
yeah.
That's a public space near the old trolley station. Tell us what that's going to include.
It's going to have benches. It's going to have public art, lemon slices. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to have 3 different windmills representing the past, the present, and the future.
Interesting. Now, I believe you told me the last public art was the giant lemon. The landmark lemon. Now there's going to be lemon slices there. Moving forward. Are they going to have areas here on the promenade for things like farmers markets and other kinds of public activities to benefit the community?
We're expecting that there will be carts or possibly stands, and we actually always been working on an ordinance to regulate and actually encourage that kind of commercial activity to give the more vitality to the area.
Very interesting. So if you haven't seen Lemon Grove in a long time, you really should go visit. There's some interesting changes.
If you haven't been to Lemon Grove in the past year, you really haven't been to Lemon Grove.
Now, they've also got some marvelous murals and things that have gone in there, showing the history of it.
Right, yeah. Well, one of my friends from the school board, Jan Laval, was involved with that project, painting the side of the bakery.
Yeah, that's the Historical Society was involved in that, and it shows four or five different large murals, each depicting in great detail a different period in Lemon Grove's colorful history.
I like that they have a big picture there. They have the native peoples and the missionaries, and they give quite a perspective. There have been human beings in Lemon Grove for probably about 10,000 years.
Right, and then later the Spanish. Lemon Grove has been through some tough budget times, too. Last year, they were forced to cut the rec department and move some of those programs into other departments and things, which I know George actually had voted against. Mm-hmm. What's going on now with the city's budget, George? Are things looking any better?
Yeah, it's rebuilding. During the budget crisis, we lost almost a third of our city employees outside of the fire and police. We're not bringing back the programs right away, but what we're doing is we're rebuilding our reserve, and you know, we're planning to gradually bring back some of the things very carefully. We don't know what the future is, and you know, if you look at the history of the state, it tends to be very cyclical in terms of the budget. So we want to make sure that we not only come back from the latest budget crisis, but we have to prepare for the next budget crisis as well.
Right. And Lemon Grove, it should be noted, is a city that does not have a luxury like some of its neighboring cities of a very large tax base. They don't have big shopping centers and lots of car dealers to bring in that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that we get done so much. If you look at how much we collect per resident in the city, we get an awful lot done.
Right. And I imagine those redevelopment projects came with some state redevelopment money. Is that correct, George?
Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother issue, is getting the state to come through on money that was committed and that has already been spent.
What exciting events are coming up in Lemon Grove?
Well, we're going to have a grand opening for Citronica One coming up real soon. And we had the grand opening for the library.
Imagine the annual holiday bonfire, as usual, which is a great community event.
Yeah, the bonfire is getting bigger and bigger, and we need to think about making it over a longer time span, possibly to accommodate the crowds. It's amazing how popular it is. It's shortly before Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. You have your own very special event coming up. Some people have the traditional birthday party for the 50th, or they go take a trip, and you decided to allow your fellow friends and community members to hold a roast and toast of George Gasol. How did you ever get talked into this, George?
Well, you know, I actually thought that since I'm turning 50, I thought it would be good to do something meaningful instead of just having a party. There is a party aspect to it, but I also wanted to do something meaningful and reflect a little bit. And my friend Raquel, we'll see if she's still my friend. Oh, this
Raquel
is over.
Raquel Velasquez, the newly elected member of the city council.
Vasquez, yeah. Raquel said that, well, how about a roast and toast? And I think it'll turn out well. We'll see. I just hope people aren't too mean. But yeah, we were thinking that since there are so many people that I've worked with over the years, that it'd be good just to get an idea of what have we been doing together, you know, and what have we accomplished. And I'm sure there'll be some funny stories. I've actually been warned about a couple things. But
I remember you wearing out your walking shoes, walking those precincts. Hopefully maybe someone will give you a few new pairs of running shoes.
Yeah, well, some people know the truth is that first time I got elected to the school board, it was my parents that walked most of Lemon Grove. They told me that I was too busy.
They taught you how. Huh?
Yeah, I learned quite a bit from them. There's quite a lot that we've accomplished together, particularly in Lemon Grove, but in East County as well. I mean, obviously, it's my 50th birthday and a chance for me to reflect, but I see it as not just me, but, you know, but what many of us have done together. The school district changed dramatically during the 10 years I was on the school board, and I was very pleased with the direction that mm-hmm. we were going in, embracing diversity and increasing parent and grandparent involvement, and building a library together with the library system. And some of the best things happened after I left. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it helps to have that long-term perspective that it's not what you do this week or next week. What you do this week and next week could have impact a year or two later. So it's good to have a long-term perspective and reflect on what's been happening.
Absolutely. Now, is the roast open to the public, or is this for friends?
Well, yeah, anybody can go.
Where and when will it be, and how do they get more information?
It's at the community room at Citronica One, mm-hmm. which is 7775 North Avenue in Lemon Grove.
Friday the 23rd, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
6 to 9?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. If they want to let me know they're coming, they can find me on Facebook.
Yeah, I think the whole world's on Facebook now, just about. Speaking of the long-term perspective, as a historian and someone who's visited Israel before, it must have been fascinating for you, George, to go back for a recent trip. When were you there first, and how things changed?
Well, I was there in 1982 when I was a college student.
Wow. So almost over 30 years ago.
Yeah. The Israelis were occupying part of Lebanon at the time. Yeah, that was a fairly tense time. Well, most times are tense. But 31 years ago, as a college student, I was there for 4 months. In a program where we studied the conflict between the Israelis and the Arabs, and visited quite a few places all over Israel and the occupied territories. And just recently, I was there for 8 days for a program that was sponsored by the Jewish community.
And it should be noted that you're neither Jewish nor Arab or Muslim.
Right.
That you're actually a Quaker?
Yeah, I belong to the Religious Society of Friends.
So peace-oriented, peaceful religion.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely coming from the perspective of wanting to see a settlement there that would have a huge impact on all of us. I think that it's extremely complicated and has a long history, but the most important thing to realize is that most people on both sides of the conflict really want a solution.
That's good to hear. Now, you visited both Jerusalem and the West Bank, I understand. What were conditions like?
The West Bank is still a fairly tense place. And it's exciting, though, to see that Ramallah has grown dramatically. It's about the size of El Cajon, and it's much bigger than it was 31 years ago. And there's a lot more economic activity, so that's very exciting. We could tell that the checkpoints and the walls and that sort of thing are causing quite a lot of stress. And the settlements, what people call settlements, are actually small cities that the Israelis are building on the West Bank. I believe that they are an impediment to the peace process. I've always felt that the Israeli settlements on the West Bank are an impediment to the peace process, but I did appreciate the fact that the chance to actually visit a settlement, and when we say settlements, they're really small cities is what they are, where the Israelis go and build on the Israeli-occupied territory in the West Bank. And I had mixed feelings about visiting a settlement, but the one we visited was one where they're building a little city. I think they're planning to have it be about 30,000 people, not far from East Jerusalem. And they actually told us that they had very good relations with the Arabs around them and were cooperating quite a bit. What I found most interesting was that the Israeli settlers and the Arabs in the local area joined together to say that they didn't want this wall that is being built. Yeah, and they managed to get, in their particular part of the West Bank, they managed to get the wall to not be built.
Right, and of course, the reason for the wall ostensibly has been the repeated attacks that are...
Yeah, the wall is different depending on who you talk to.
Right.
A lot of the Palestinians that live on the West Bank see the wall as very oppressive, but the Israelis feel that the wall is making them safer. And it's one of those things where people just see something completely differently, depending on their point of view. The one positive thing I can say about the wall is that it has probably deterred some people from coming to Israel to blow things up.
Right, and with Hamas still in charge in Palestine.
Well, Hamas got voted in Gaza. And we didn't go to Gaza because mm-hmm. it was thought to be too dangerous.
Right. If you could be the president for a day or the secretary of state, George, what things would you do in this region to help bring peace to the area that perhaps have not been done, or has everything that can be tried been done?
Well, an awful lot has been tried. I think that the international community does have a huge role, the United States and the European Union, and the Arab countries that are reasonably stable can have a big role in the Middle East.
So you think some other nations perhaps have not done as much as they could or should do, George? Can you give us some specific examples there?
Yeah, that particular part of the Middle East has been off the radar screen for quite a while. Quite a lot was accomplished during the Clinton era. The Oslo Accords made people very, very encouraged. That was back in the 90s. People were very encouraged and believed that peace could be coming, and there was actually a lot of talk about an economic boom coming out of that part of the region. And it didn't quite materialize like we were hoping, but there was significant progress that people might not completely appreciate. The Palestinians have had a chance to organize themselves under the Palestinian Authority, and it's been very, very rocky, and in some cases negative in the sense of money being wasted and probably a lot of people would say the wrong people getting elected. But new entities go through a rocky period, and I think that Palestinians are probably not unusual in that regard. I think that you really have to take the long run and take the attitude that you're in it for the long haul. There are going to be ups and downs and difficulties. And the Israelis, your average Israeli actually understands this better than you'd expect, because their country, of course, has been around since 48, and actually many of them have been there even longer. But it's going to take a long time for things to sort themselves out, and part of the problem that they're running into is a sense, on both sides, they don't really have forever to work this out, that they have to go back to the table and try again to get a settlement. Neither one of the sides we talked to was very optimistic, but they want to go to the table and give it their best try because they think that's absolutely essential. There are a couple things that are encouraging. One is that when we actually visited the PLO office in Ramallah.
Oh my goodness, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that would not have happened 31 years ago. There was no PLO office in the occupied territories.
Did you also talk to Israeli officials while you were there?
Yes, we talked to one of Netanyahu's deputies who's working on the peace process.
Interesting. So when we say this guy is connected, he really
and
is.
So the PLO position has evolved quite a lot over the years. They're looking for a solution to the refugee crisis that could include resettlement and repatriation. And I was thinking that they're opening the door to the international community.
Well, that's encouraging,
to find a practical solution to the question of what do you do with the Palestinian refugees.
Right, when you have two groups of people who both think historically they have a right to occupy the same land, it's an inherent conflict, isn't it?
Yeah, and one of the things I found frustrating about the conflict is that the refugees tend to be forgotten or manipulated.
Now, how many refugees are there?
Oh, there's millions.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're in several different countries. They're actually the majority of the population in Jordan. The international community could play a huge role in resettling or repatriating refugees.
Are you saying the Arab nations in particular?
Definitely. Most of them live in Arab nations. It's hard to say exactly what's holding this back. But I think that a lot of people have been trying to keep this refugee situation alive for their own political motives. But the PLO is sending out a signal that they really want to move on this. They want a solution.
Very interesting. Well, there's certainly precedent for that. I mean, you look at Egypt, Anwar Sadat, who at one time was considered by some a terrorist himself, and he came to the table eventually in the peace process with Jimmy Carter, right?
Right. Another thing that's encouraging is that on both sides, there's a recognition that you can't go back to 67 or any other year, that you have to work with a lot of what's happened since. The Israelis have been putting out the message that they're willing to give up quite a bit, but the number one thing that the Israelis are looking for is security.
The right for their nation to exist and for people to be in peace, basically.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the PLO has already come out and said that Israel has a right to exist. That's a tricky one where the two sides have a different idea of what Israel and Palestine should be and could be, and a different idea of the two-state solution. But the PLO has come out and said that Israel is okay with them. What they want is they want their own state that can exist side by side and be viable. Mm-hmm. The problem that they've had in the recent past with the Israeli proposals is that it's too restrictive on their movement, and the most recent really concrete proposal coming from the Israelis would have had the Israelis practically surrounding the Palestinians and also would have them divided in three different pieces. There is a solution somewhere, and it's elusive to both sides, but I think people have a feeling that there is a solution.
I think someday when you're around celebrating your 100th birthday, maybe, there might be peace in the region.
Yeah, well, I think that it'll go one of two ways. One way is that it could go for the two-state solution, which is what people tend to be talking about. And the key to that is that you have to find a way for the Israelis to have the security that they're looking for and the Palestinians to have the autonomy that they're looking for. And they have to be able to circulate in their state, and they also have to be able to circulate with their Arab neighbors and have access to the sea. And
opportunities, I would imagine, economic prosperity, opportunities that they really
The viability of the Palestinian state is a huge issue because, you know, we know it's going to be a small country, and it has going to have a lot of challenges. To be viable, it needs to have access to water, and it also will need to have a trade relationship with Israel. Here's one of the great ironies of the whole discussion, is that the Palestinians are put in their negotiating plan for what they say they want. They want to be trading with Israel.
Interesting.
Yeah, and what they're putting out there is that if the peace agreement comes through the way they're talking, it would mean the end of the Arab boycott of Israel.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because the Palestinians are actually insisting on trade with Israel.
Fascinating. Well, it's from a social justice standpoint. We are the Network for Social Justice. It's fascinating because there's two groups here that both really have denied their social justice from their point of view.
Their Palestinian state couldn't be functional without trade with Israel. And, of course, they also are insisting that they be able to trade with their Arab neighbors. And you put that together, if they're trading with their Arab neighbors and they're trading with Israel, then effectively the Arab boycott of Israel would be over.
Interesting. Well, it's fascinating to think of the possibilities there.
See, this is where people often make a mistake, is they think about all the things that could go wrong, okay? And, you know, you follow the Middle East and you find that whenever you do something that you think is positive, there's
there's extremists that tend to try to derail the peace process, actually.
Yeah, but here's some of the things that could go right. An end to the Arab boycott of Israel would be huge economically for both Israel and for the Arab countries.
Interesting.
Would be a big economic help. Another thing, when we talked to the mayor of Tel Aviv, was very passionate about wanting some kind of solution. He said that if they could come up with a peace proposal that actually lasted, he predicted that tourism to Tel Aviv would increase fivefold.
Wow, that's huge.
The mayor of Tel Aviv told us that in recent years, they think the Israel brand isn't very good, so they've been pushing the Tel Aviv brand. But he says with a peace settlement, he thinks tourism to Tel Aviv would increase fivefold. So there's worry and pessimism. There's also a lot of thinking that they have to give it their best try and give it their best shot, and if they can succeed, there'll be huge benefits.
George, thank you very much. It's inspiring to know that there is hope for the region out there yet. And we certainly appreciate you coming in today to share your views and your insights on not only the Middle East, but right here at home, what's going on in Lemon Grove. And on behalf of KNSJ, we all wish you a very happy 50th birthday.
Oh, wonderful. I love KNSJ, and I'm so excited about the development of the station. And I also want to say that Miriam Raftery is quite well known in the East County. It's an honor to be interviewed by East County's premier journalist. I should also say that I feel very fortunate to have friends like Raquel Vasquez, who are putting together this roast and toast, and I hope I still feel that they're my friends when the activity is done.
I hope so too. We're looking forward to being at the roast and hopefully getting a few sound bites to come back and play for our listeners next week. Thank you, George.
Okay.
Very, very much.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Paris?
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ, bringing you this week's Agricultural Report. A tiny wasp from the other side of the world has been drafted into a big role in San Diego, protecting the multi-million-dollar citrus industry from a potentially devastating threat. The wasp sucks the life out of the Asian citrus psyllid, which spreads a disease fatal to all types of citrus trees. Scientists have scoured spots around the world for varieties of the wasp to battle the psyllid. The best bet seems to be a strain found in Pakistan's Punjab region. The area has a desert climate similar to ours and also produces citrus. The wasps are just 1 millimeter long. That is thinner than a dime. University of California Riverside researcher Mark Hoddle personally transported the bugs from Pakistan. His first stop was quarantine, where the wasps were tested against other pests and reviewed for any other possible effects, said Dr. Tracy Ellis, an entomologist with the County of San Diego. Teams started releasing the wasp around Southern California in June, including the first batches let loose in San Diego. So far, they've made 17 releases in our area. Dr. Ellis said this method of using nature to fight nature has a good track record. It has worked successfully on numerous citrus pests. The Asian citrus psyllid was first discovered in San Diego 5 years ago and has since become firmly established here. So far, however, we've been spared Huanglongbing, or citrus greening, the bacterial disease that the psyllid spreads. But, Ellis warned, wherever the psyllid goes, the disease follows. It has affected citrus growers around the world. Florida has seen its crops decimated. Local agriculture inspectors have all been trained to watch for signs of the disease. The department's recently released crop report shows that in 2012, the San Diego region had 13,000 acres producing citrus with a value of $117 million. Ellis says Huanglongbing could wipe that all out. It's a 100% threat, she warned. But she added, this wasp, if it became established, could really slow the spread of Asian citrus psyllid and bring it down to the level where it could be manageable and not spread like wildfire like it is now. If you own citrus, here's how you can help. One way is taking steps to control ants. Argentine ants, our most common variety here, will physically fight off the Tamarixia wasp trying to lay its eggs on the psyllids, and if you can limit those ants, you'll make it easier for the wasps to gain a toehold. You can also notify the Agriculture Department if you find large concentrations of these psyllids, green bug with little red eyes, or suspect your plants have been afflicted with Huanglongbing. The disease causes discoloration of leaves and misshapen fruit, and it will ultimately kill citrus trees. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. The Gaskill Brothers Gunfighters will be reenacting the historical Campo gunfight at the Golden Acorn on Saturday, August 24th, as part of the Golden Acorn's Barbecue and Chili Cook-Off. The cook-off is a free event and runs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The reenactment of the gunfight will begin at 1 p.m. The original gunfight in the tiny town of Campo, which took place December 4, 1875, was forgotten by history for almost a century. However, the Campo gunfight lasted longer and had more casualties than the shootout at the OK Corral. The skit's director and producer, Brian Harrington, will narrate the show. Brian has authored the novel Campo, The Forgotten Gunfight, and will be signing copies of his book after the show. The Golden Acorn is located off I-8 in Campo. A food tasting walking tour of downtown Julian as part of Bite San Diego stops at Julian Cider Mill, Julian Candy Basket, Apple Alley Bakery, Candied Apple Pastry, Bailey Barbecue, Julian Hard Cider, and Mom's Pie. This yummy tour requires tickets, has a minimum age of 18 years old, and is led each Saturday and Sunday through mid-November from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. See BiteSanDiego.com for details and ticket purchase. Visit the Bonita Museum and Cultural Center to meet the artists and view new work from West Coast drawings artists for their 10th anniversary exhibition entitled Drawing Alive. The exhibit will also include live demonstrations with Joan Thompson on August 24th and begins at 1 p.m. The exhibit is also open next Saturday, August 31st. The San Diego-based Gypsy Swing Cats perform a blend of swing, jazz, and blues. Their music merges gypsy melodies and rhythms with the influences of American jazz, reminiscent of Paris in the 1930s. Cool, charming, and classy. The Gypsy Swing Cats will be performing on Wednesday evenings from 6:30 to 9 p.m., ongoing through mid-December at Kaffeemeister in Santee. A Rancho San Diego food truck gathering each Thursday from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. is an ongoing event to support the Valhalla High School Athletics Department. Valhalla High School is located in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. Enjoy the Sam Johnson Jazz Group, featuring Johnson on electric and upright bass, Alan Worthington on guitar, and George Casas on sax. The jazz group performs on Fridays, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., at Cosmos Coffee Cafe in La Mesa. The musical Annie, presented by the Visionary School for the Performing Arts, will be performed at the Visionary Performance Space on El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego near La Mesa. Performances of this popular play are on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings at 7 p.m., with one matinee performance at 2 p.m. on Saturday. There's still time to catch the last of the summer concerts in East County. First, on Thursday night, August 22nd, from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., Santee Summer Concert Series presents the Cadillacs as they perform rock and roll hits from the 50s through the 90s. This concert also features a classic car display by the East County Cruisers. Next, Dinner and a Concert, formerly Concerts on the Promenade, is a weekly concert and dance hosted by Downtown El Cajon Business Partners, performed on the Prescott Promenade, which is surrounded by a variety of restaurants. This Friday, August 23rd, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., enjoy a live performance by Back to the Garden, a group devoted to Woodstock tributes. Prescott Promenade is located on East Main Street in downtown El Cajon. On Saturday, August 24th, there will be a Celebration of Life benefit concert at the VFW Post on Tavern Road in Alpine. The concert will honor our nation's military and their families. It will include performances by Three Chord Justice, The Legends, and special guest Tegan Taylor. Everyone is welcome to dance and enjoy food and beverages. At Sweetwater Summit Regional Park and Campground in Bonita, there will be ranger-led hikes at Red Hill on Saturdays and Sundays from 10 a.m. to noon, featuring 1.5 miles of walking and taking in the sights, including native birds and plants, and points of interest. Bring water, a hat, a walking stick, and binoculars. Groups and clubs welcome. Meet at the flagpole next to the ranger station. Summer Movies in the Park program of San Diego County Parks has two movies this weekend in East County. Hotel Transylvania will be shown on Friday, August 23rd at Lemon Grove Park. And on Saturday, August 24th, The Croods is featured at Jess Martin Park in Julian. All movies start at dusk. Also at San Diego County Parks this weekend, join the ranger at Otay Lakes County Park on Sunday, August 25th, for a fun Kumeyaay Supermarket scavenger hunt designed for kids ages 8 through 12. The hunt runs every Sunday through September 29th at 12:30 p.m. Scavenger hunters will learn how the native peoples of San Diego survived without grocery stores as they look for the plants the Kumeyaay used for everyday needs and make connections between modern conveniences and ancient ways. This environmental education class is 1 hour long and leaves from the ranger office. A minimum of 5 participants is needed for the hike to take place. For further information on this and other county parks, see the website for Parks and Recreation San Diego County. The Braxham Brass Quintet will be performing in concert at the Lakeside Community Presbyterian Church in Lakeside on Sunday, August 25th at 4 p.m. Braxham Brass specializes in bringing new and exciting brass music to audiences. Next week, we will be featuring an upcoming powwow, Barona's 43rd annual powwow at the Barona Indian Reservation in Lakeside, will be taking place all weekend from August 30th to September 1st. There is free admission and camping, as well as Native American vendors, contest dancing in all categories, including gourd dancing, hand drum contest, and men's fancy dance will be presented. All of this information is on our comprehensive calendar online at www.eastcountymagazine.org for festivals, cultural events, family activities, outdoor adventures, street fairs, wine tastings, theater, food events, and more. If you have an East County event to add to our calendar, please email it to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. See you around East County.
San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez has announced a plan to introduce legislation this week to prevent payment for immigration reform services until the federal immigration reform is enacted, and to ensure that other consumer protections are provided to immigrants pursuing a pathway to U.S. citizenship under the pending Federal Immigration Reform Act in Congress. She says, as millions of California families face the historic opportunity of improving their lives by pursuing a pathway to citizenship, the state must be ready to ensure immigration services are performed by competent professionals and include anti-fraud protections. Assemblywoman Gonzalez added, AB 1159 prepares California for this upswing in demand by creating more accountability and transparency in an otherwise daunting process for immigrants who are already targets of fraud now. AB 1159 will be considered this week by the Senate Committee on Business, Professions, and Economic Development. Assemblywoman Gonzalez has asked that the legislature act with urgency, requiring a higher vote threshold, in order to crack down on unscrupulous practices by some professionals who are demanding payment for immigration reform services and promising that clients could cut to the front of the line when the federal immigration reforms are enacted, if they pay now. AB 1159's goal of empowering immigrants during their pursuit of citizenship by prohibiting anyone who is not an attorney from presenting themselves as one will also make it illegal for attorneys or consultants to demand money from clients seeking Immigration Reform Act services before the federal reform is enacted. The bill will also require immigration consultants to deposit into a client trust account all funds received from a client of immigration reform services prior to performing the services. Attorneys and consultants must also provide a client with a written contract in the client's language with specified requirements in that contract. AB 1159 increases the required bond for consultants performing Immigration Reform Act services to $100,000 and allows immigrants to recover damages related to immigration fraud. The bill has gained early support from the State Bar of California, labor groups, faith-based organizations, and groups dedicated to advocating for immigrant rights and equitable access to justice, Assemblywoman Gonzalez says. The Procter & Gamble Company has issued a recall on pet foods that may be contaminated with salmonella. The recall includes select lots of Eukanuba and Iams brand dog food and cat food. No salmonella-related illnesses have been reported to date in association with the product lots. Salmonella can affect animals eating the products, and there is also a risk to humans from handling contaminated pet products, especially if they have not thoroughly washed their hands after having contact with the products or surfaces exposed to the products. The affected product was distributed to select retailers across the United States. These products were made during a 10-day window at a single manufacturing site. The recall affects only the specified lots of dry foods. No canned food, biscuit treats, or supplements are affected by the announcement. Consumers who purchased a product that is on the recall list should stop using it and discard it. You can contact Procter & Gamble at a toll-free number, 800-208-0172, Monday through Friday during business hours. Or you can check the websites at www.iams.com or www.eukanuba.com. That's www.eukanuba.com. We also have a list of the recalled products posted at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Antonio F. Viana, author and educator. My guest has written 20 books and 6 screenplays since 2003.
He's also created three popular workshops: Re-careering at Any Age, How to Write a Book and Get Published, and How to Write a Screenplay. Welcome, Antonio. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for inviting me.
You have written 18 novels and 2 nonfiction books in a period of 10 years. And yet you also work as instructor and area chair of business at the University of Phoenix here in San Diego. How do you find the time and the motivation to write so much and on such a variety of themes?
To me, it's all about commitments and priorities. I mean, essentially, I do what I value in my life and where I want to spend my time. Uh-huh. This means that I don't do a lot of things, but I rather do a few things that I try to do very well, like being an expert. And my life is a 24/7 life because I can write any time during the day or evening or any time during the week. I can control what I do, and I really, really like that. So I do what I do because I want to become good at it and not become a generalist.
So you have to cut back on leisure activities.
I come back on a lot of leisure activities and a lot of sleep because there's only 24 hours in this day to be able to do what I want to do.
So in a typical day, how many hours do you write?
I'll schedule my hours for the whole week, probably on a Sunday. So yesterday I looked at my calendar and asked myself, what are my projects for this whole week? Mm-hmm. And I've got essentially 2 projects going on in the area of writing. And I'll look at probably 2 or 3 hours each day committed to some form of writing or editing or researching in the projects that I'm working on.
Very organized. You've been called a prime example of someone who's re-careered himself. I mean, I know that in your former life, you were an Air Force officer and human resources executive. So how did you transition from that to author?
I was working in Northern California, specifically San Francisco, with a professional medical group, and I was the chief HR executive. Mm-hmm. But I felt at a point in time that I needed to switch. I had what I call the itch to switch. And I think everybody develops the itch sometime in their career,
right,
whether it's at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or whatever. But I developed the itch. But I really didn't know what I wanted to do if I had left, changed the human resources executive role. So like any good business person, I did an inventory of who I was and what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so I analyzed my skills and my strengths and my weaknesses and my passions and all the things that go into sort of a self-evaluation. Mm-hmm. And I figured that I could do a couple of things very well outside of corporate life. And there was one thing that I was petrified of doing that I thought it could become a developmental opportunity for me. So I gave myself the title of ACE. ACE.
Okay.
A stands for author, C stands for career coach, and E stands for educator. I could be a career coach and educator pretty easily, but I really was petrified of writing. So writing became my developmental opportunity that I decided to commit to. And today, 10 years later, I'm really spending most of my time doing the writing. So it was a business plan that I created, and I considered myself to be the business. And I needed to figure out how I could make money as me, as that person who runs the business.
So if we could say that some writers are born and some are made, you made yourself.
I made myself. I was not an avid writer or an avid reader in the day. In fact, even today, I don't do a lot of reading of full books. I do reading for purposes of research and for looking at how writers are able to tell a compelling story or develop compelling characters.
Craft. Well, I know you've written novels in a variety of genres, books on espionage, murder, love stories, ghost stories, and even a vampire trilogy. Which book did you enjoy the most writing and why? And is it difficult to cross types of books?
Yeah, I'm always asked this question about what my favorite book is. And so I will answer that in a sort of circular way. I have 2 favorite books. One is my first book. It's called The Tale from a Ghost Dance. I had no idea what I was doing when I was writing this book. I was experimenting with my writing style. I was experimenting with creating stories and characters. And it's probably, although the book is still in print, it is the worst crafted book of all time.
If you do say so yourself.
If I do say so myself, but I love it because I look at the books that I'm writing now and I can see the growth that I have been able to accomplish in my writing career. So my second favorite book will always be my last book because it shows what I'm really capable of doing. And that last book is called Scarlet Rose, and it just came out in January of this year.
I know that you've published independently, like so many authors are choosing to do in this new age. What made you go that route, and how do you market yourself?
I'm a control freak. I want to control what I do, and I want to own what I do. And the way to do that for me is look at independent publishing. Mm-hmm. So I'm with a print-on-demand publisher called Author Solutions. Essentially, I give them my manuscript, and I tell them what to do, how to put it into a book format. I then pay them services for marketing, for editing, for all kinds of things that I would have to pay someone else to do if I was even with a traditional publisher. So the notion of independent publishing allows me to control what I want to do and market it in a way that I think is appropriate. And also, because I now do screenplays, because I own the novel, I can adapt that novel to a screenplay without asking permission from anyone.
Right. And do you have any screenplays that are being optioned or?
I have six screenplays now being looked at in Hollywood. Five of them are adapted from my novels. The sixth one, which is called Desperate, that just came out probably a month ago, is an original screenplay. And the idea is to leverage the novel and the screenplay towards Hollywood.
One last question, Antonio. What are you writing now and when will it be available?
I'm completing a novel called Crush. It's a suspense drama thriller novel. It's about telemarketing scams and how this person overcomes a telemarketing scam. It probably will come out in January of next year.
Okay. Look forward to it. Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Antonio F. Viana, please visit his website at www.vianabooks4u.com, and that's the number 4 and the letter U. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Miriam Raftery bringing you this week's local government report. The Ramona Water District Board is trying to oust one of its elected members. Last year, the board voted to change its meeting time from 4:30 to 2 o'clock. But Director Kit Kessinger was absent and says he can't attend meetings so early in the day. He wants the board to change the time back to 4:30 p.m. when more members of the public can also attend. But the board has refused. Now, Kessinger has missed 7 meetings over the past 90 days, and his fellow directors have asked Board President Daryl Beck to draft a letter of reprimand and ask for Kessinger's resignation. Backers of Kessinger say the board engineered the time change to stifle an underdog who has questioned backroom deals. Posts on the Ramona Sentinel website indicate. Ramona resident Don Kettick stated, "No one who's paying the water district bills can make a meeting at that time. We're all working. The meeting should be at 7 p.m. The Ramona Water District is clearly in need of having the light of truth shone upon them." In El Cajon, the City Council will consider an ordinance to restrict alcohol sale at its next meeting on August 27th. The law would not affect restaurants or bars, but it would restrict alcohol sales at future stores and would also require current stores to comply with the law. Violators would receive warnings and small fines initially, but could be shut down if serious violations occur repeatedly. New, smaller stores selling alcohol could only open in areas of the city with lower crime rates and where the state rules say there is room for more alcohol sales. Currently, the only areas that meet those requirements are Fletcher Hills and Granite Hills. The law would not apply to large stores that have less than 10% of store space set aside for alcohol sales, such as supermarkets and drug stores. You can post comments on the proposed law on the city's website. The issue is expected to be heard by El Cajon Council next Tuesday. Check the city website Monday when a final agenda should be posted.
East County provides a rich and varied culinary experience, and the East County Eater is here to tell you all about it. No backcountry bar and grill is too remote. No specialty food restaurant tucked away in some tiny strip mall is too obscure for the eater. From a Mediterranean bistro in Alpine to sushi in Santee, East County's homegrown dining establishments will surprise and please you. Food is the eater's obsession, and East County is the eater's beat. It's hard work, but someone has to do it. Stay tuned. The East County Eater is on the prowl. The longtime standard for the finest Mexican food and ambiance is in East County's Grossmont Center. San Diegans have always considered Casa de Pico the perfect example of Mexican dining. Whenever my relatives showed up from Minnesota and wanted to eat real good Mexican food, I would take them to, where else, Casa de Pico in Old Town, you darn tootin'. Ever since an ownership transfer of Bazar del Mundo compelled Diane Powers to move her fabulous restaurant, La Mesa has been blessed. Old Town's loss is East County's gain. Casa de Pico brought the best of nostalgic Old Town to Grossmont Center, including outdoor patios and flowering bougainvilleas, a friendly cantina, and a spacious indoor dining area decorated with vivid wall murals and folk art. The smell of fresh masa greets you while you watch fresh tortillas being handmade the old-fashioned way. My latest visit reminded me that Casa de Pico has elevated food to an art form. Guacamole arrived festooned with olives, tomatoes, cheese curls, and a crown of lettuce, all arranged to resemble una papagayo, a parrot, the perfect complement to a margarita. These are real margaritas, mis amigos. So don't order the grande unless you have a few friends to share. Next came a cheese crisp special, a house specialty for more than 30 years. A crispy flour tortilla topped with refried beans, shredded chicken, beef or puerco, melted cheese, a generous dollop of sour cream, plus a pinwheel of avocado and tomato slices. For something exciting and different, I sampled the Ensalada Fiesta Tropical, an artfully arrayed salad with oranges, sliced grapes, black olives, miniature sweet peppers, and red chipotle tortilla strips served with sweet yet spicy mango chipotle dressing on a conch-style tortilla shell. Magnifico! Along with Casa de Pico's rebirth came changes. Casa de Pico in Old Town always had a long line to be seated. Not so in La Mesa, where you don't have to compete with tourists. That said, the restaurant was doing such a brisk business that allowing patrons to linger over dessert and Mexican coffee was not a luxury to be afforded at first. Now, if you want to linger after dinner, you'll be delighted to learn that the restaurant has added several postres, desserts, like deep-fried ice cream or sopapillas, puffed pastry topped with cinnamon and honey, to linger over while you sip your café con leche. They even have a new healthy dining menu selection featuring such innovative items as stir-fry Mexican food. Can't get enough of Casa de Pico's fare? No problema. They now offer takeout food and for the next office get-together, fiesta catering. El último is the addition of almuerzos for early risers who crave huevos rancheros to start the day. The rebirth of Casa de Pico in La Mesa brought all of the great things it was known for when it was an old town and made them even better. For festive fun with fabulous food, what more can an aficionado of Mexican cuisine desire? Casa de Pico, 5500 Grossmont Center Drive in La Mesa.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some trees that I absolutely love. And number one on that list is always and forever for me going to be the California live oaks. We're here in East County where the California live oaks are the most beautiful tree that we have. One live oak tree, mature, fully grown, can support up to 1,500 species of other life. They are so beautiful, so iconic, so much an important part of what we think we're seeing when we look at California. It's especially important to plant a live oak tree now because of the fact so many of the oldest of the trees out in the hills are being killed by the gold-spotted oak borer. That is a pest which is imported, and it is killing a lot of the old trees. But you can grow California live oaks on your property. What people don't understand is that's a fast-growing tree if you just hook it up to some irrigation while it's young. The first 10 years of life, you can water that tree year-round. You can put a dripper on it and walk away from it, let it get some water once a week, and it will grow to a 15 to 20-foot tree in just 10 years. And that's a good tree. That's a hardwood tree. That's not a junky tree like an ash. By the way, don't plant ash trees. There's a bad disease coming from back east, which is eventually going to kill all the ash trees in California, as it has all the ash trees from east of Ohio coming west. So plant yourself a beautiful California live oak. That wouldn't be limited to just the live oaks. If you live out in the back country, consider an Engelmann oak too. That was Kara Knott's favorite tree, and that is a beautiful tree. It's also known as a Mesa oak. It will take less water than the California live oak and do beautifully. Some other good trees, not all of them natives, that you could put in your yard. There are two great trees from Australia that do so well here. They're quick growing and they are great shade trees. They don't have any obnoxious habits. They don't have terrible roots. They don't drop a big mess. They're good trees. My favorite of them is called the peppermint tree or the peppermint willow tree. It's Agonis flexuosa. A-G-O-N-I-S, Agonis flexuosa. It's a beautiful tree. It has a natural weeping form, gets about 25 feet tall, maybe 15 feet wide, and grows very quickly. After a few years, you can shut the water off to it, and it'll make it on its own. It smells lovely, and it has the cutest flowers when it blooms. It hangs down something that looks like a black ribbon with little white flowers on it. The ribbon is maybe half an inch wide. It's really a cute tree. And everybody I know who's ever used it as a yard tree or on the side of the house has been delighted with it. A very similar tree is called the Australian willow, Geigera parviflora. It's about the same size. It's very drought tolerant. It's similar to the Agonis and a very popular, small, non-messy tree. Now let's talk about a nice tree that's messy. What does that mean? Well, it means that it mulches itself. And since we want to mulch things here in East County, this is a great tree. It takes care of itself. It's an African sumac tree. You can see those in front of the El Cajon Library, all the way around the library. There's another one at the Rancho San Diego Library. That's the big tree that's kind of a dull green color out front, reddish bark. It's the first tree that I planted when I moved onto my property 13 years ago. It's very popular with birds. It grows with virtually no water once you get it established. After 2 years, shut the water off. It'll be fine on its own. That's a tree that if you prune it correctly while it's still a baby, it will grow the rest of its life for you, and you will never have to prune it again. Another small tree that's very pretty to put in your yard. Put in a bronze loquat. It's not a big tree. It'll never get over about 15 feet tall, maybe 12 feet wide, even if it's very successful. And the leaves are big and green and glossy, and it also bears fruit. Now, I personally don't care for the fruit. It has a big seed and kind of a weird orange fruit around it. It doesn't taste bad. It just doesn't seem to me worth the effort, but scrub jays adore it. I know that on my bronze loquat, I never get to eat the fruit because the birds find it before I do. So those are some ideas that you can try in your yard. And I think that all of these trees are basically pain-free. You won't be calling the pruning guy constantly to come and hack on it because these are good trees.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.